On this episode of Big Boys Don't Cry, we discuss the film Keeping the Faith. You don't have to have seen the film to enjoy the podcast, but if you do proceed and listen without having seen the film, just be aware that the plot will be spoiled for you. Enjoy.
Hello.
Oh, I'm getting double Gordon there. Wait, say something again.
Hello, my name is Double Gordon.
Oh no, single Gordon. Wait, single Gordon now. Wait, your name is Dub Gordon.
My name is Dub Gordon. That's the remix of the official Rob Gordon album is Dub Gordon.
Dub Gordon. Also, it sounds like one of those Disney cartoons from the late 80s that would have been on, like, somewhere between DuckTales and Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, all that stuff.
Dub Gordon.
Dub Gordon. He's a crime-fighting dub musician, obviously.
I'd watch a show about a crime-fighting dub musician.
Who also happens to be a goose, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
So are you now getting all the single Gordons, all the single Gordons?
Yep. If I like it, maybe I will put a ring on it, by which I mean a ringtone.
Ah,
remember ringtones?
I remember ringtones. I remember when you used to buy a music magazine and the final three pages of it would just be adverts for text in and get this ringtone. It will cost you £2. Or
oh my God. Those were the days, man. I actually had a little bit of a sideline. I feel like I might have talked about this on this podcast before, but you know, I think this is episode 120. So, you know, I think they're at the point now where we can just start repeating content. We don't even have to start doing new films anymore. Anyway, the story is, when I was in sort of year 9, year 10, and the Nokia phones released their composer, the ringtone composer, I was one of the only few people who actually realized how to compose a regular old melody on there, and that it was basically just the 8 notes of the major scale. So I had a nice little sideline in getting people to pay me in chocolate to make them ringtones.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Those are the days.
I did something similar with mine, and people were like, Rob, how did you get that to work? So, like, oh, because it's pretty easy.
You didn't have any mystery, because you weren't the entrepreneurial type.
No, I was. I'm not a capitalist pig like you, Paddy.
Yeah, I'm all about the moolah. I was there with my lemonade stand.
Because you're a secret lemonade seller.
Yeah, yeah. Don't tell anyone. I was selling lemonade underage and not giving the money to the tax man.
Yeah, tax man didn't get none of your lemonade money. That's what Beyonce's Lemonade was about.
Yeah.
It's about free market enterprise of selling lemonade and not giving money back to the state.
Yeah, she's a lemonade neoliberal.
Speaking of neoliberals.
She's an anarchist punk like Jeff Bezos. He hates the man so much he pays no tax at all.
I know. He is a true...
Really sticking it to the man there, man.
Yeah, he is, you know, that's the true free spirit of not being the establishment.
Yep.
Billionaire Jeff Bezos.
Who really, really looks like a villain from a not good Superman film, doesn't he?
He does. He really does.
Really sort of bad Lex Luthor. You know, he's like Kevin Spacey as Lex Luthor, but someone sort of took a bit of the meat off that bone, you know?
He's the YouTube fan movie Lex Luthor.
Oh, no. Are they YouTube fan movies? Is that a thing?
Oh, yeah. Fan movies are a huge deal.
How do they make them? Is it just like people in like cheap outfits on camera phones?
Well, some of them are that, but some of them actually they put in a huge amount of time and they're actually quite impressive. Like the sheer dedication just to make like a 10-20 minute long short.
I mean, obviously I'm looking forward to The Last Jedi being remade without any women in it.
No, these are more good faith like fan projects where they genuinely love what they're remaking.
Oh, okay.
Instead of bitter, angry fools. So it's actually, quite nice, some of them. And it's a nice little love letter to the franchises that they enjoy.
In that case, look out for my fan movie, The Bridges of Madison County 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, coming soon to a YouTube near you.
I'm looking forward to doing After 2.
Oh no. After two. After the afterward. After.
It's after, but the T in after is a two.
Oh, two after two furious.
Exactly. Oh, exactly.
After Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah, I did not see Hobbs and Shaw.
I've heard surprisingly good things.
It looks like ridiculous fun. Much like I have a soft spot for the Fast and Furious movies. I think the first few were, I don't know, they were what you expected, but then after that they amped up the silliness to such an incredible degree that it's impossible to watch one and not enjoy it.
Yeah, like they don't pretend to be anything that they are not, do they?
No, no. Whereas, speaking of things to that pretend to be things they're not, that is acting. And you know what actors are in?
Is what people do. Actors, they're the people who appear in movies, right?
They are. And funnily enough...
Pretending people.
We watched a movie, Paddy.
Yeah, Puczynski.
What do you want to cover first? Do you want to cover Puczynski or do you want to cover Keeping
No, we should... Puczynski's an extra, so we should talk about the film first.
Okay.
Just in case all the people who... I know out there are lots of... The casual fans, they get annoyed by the preliminary chat. They're just like here to hear the serious film chat and film discussion. So we've got to give the people what they want.
Sure, sure. Just don't skimp on my Puczynski time at the end of this episode.
No, I won't. I've got all sorts of things to say about Puczynski.
So I had not seen Keeping the Faith.
No, you had not. I had seen it before.
In fact, it's never really been a movie that had massively been on my radar, which is funny given that I'm a big fan of Ed Norton.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of knew the name, but that was about it. But this was a nice movie, wasn't it? It's a kind of thoroughly pleasant film with some silly comedy thrown in.
Yeah, it is pleasant. And as you say, I've always been a little bit baffled as to why people don't seem to have heard of it, or it seems to have flown beneath the radar, especially as, I don't know, are there any other films that star Edward Norton and Ben Stiller in this kind of buddy role?
I don't think so, no. I've not seen anything.
Obviously, there's Zoolander Club, the famous early 2000s punchy comedy movie.
Where one model becomes friends with another model, but it turns out they're the same person.
Yeah, and they can't talk about it. That's the rule.
You can't talk about zoos. That's what it's truly about.
The first rule of the zoo is you don't talk about the zoo, which is a problem for the children's film Madagascar.
Yeah, precisely. Or We Bought a Zoo.
Yeah.
Proved to be their downfall.
I mean, it's there in the title.
We Bought a... Redacted.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know if he was in anything else with Ben Stiller.
Yeah, because I feel like they have quite good chemistry in this film. They have good, like, bro chemistry, and you believe that they're friends. And it's just... I've always quite liked this film. And just wondered why it seemed to have flown beneath the radar when it seemed to have made it back at the box office. But I guess it was released in 2000, so for people our age, it was kind of a bit too early, and then it didn't necessarily really endure. So I wonder.
Yeah, but because it's interesting, because you look on IMDb, and it does have nearly 50,000 ratings.
Okay.
So it's not as though this is a completely forgotten movie. That's a fairly sizable amount of ratings for IMDb. But yeah, it's the kind of thing where it's been forgotten about in both Ben Stiller and Edward Norton's careers, in favor of other movies, which have kind of, you know, so with Ben Stiller, you've got Zoolander, for instance, you've got There's Something About Mary, and then for Edward Norton, you've got things like Fight Club, you've got the incredible Death to Smoochie, the film that is on everybody's lips when you think of Ed Norton.
Yeah, it's the number one Edward Norton film.
But you know what I mean? They've got these other iconic films that have become these kind of very memeable, very quotable movies that have taken precedence over this. And I wonder if it is a fact. It feels a bit old fashioned, doesn't it?
Yes, it feels... It's 2000, but it's essentially a 90s film. The only way you know it's in the 21st century is because at one point he says it in quite a clumsy way. But there's also a bit where Edward Norton is amazed by Ben Stiller's cell phone and all the business people are wearing Britney-style mics.
Yes, yeah. He's got a cell phone. Oh my God, what a high society man.
Yeah. He's a big, important man.
And so It's weird because, you know, Edward Norton's someone who gets a lot of praise and he has a lot of fans. yet this is the only movie out of his that he has directed.
Right.
It's his only film he's directed. There's another one coming out this year called Motherless Brooklyn, which seems to be some kind of 1950s crime gangster thingamajig, which looks interesting. But up until that point, you know, you've got this very acclaimed actor who went into the directing chair and no one's really talking about it.
That's interesting, because it seems like this is the kind of film where it's a good directorial debut and you go on to other things.
Yes, yeah. I wouldn't say that this is, you know, it was fairly well received at the time. You know, not seen as a classic. And I think that's kind of perhaps another reason why it's not sort of retained a huge legacy. But there's nothing wrong with it. And I think for a debut, it's a very solid one. And it's got some very, it's quite well paced. It's got some good performances. So yeah, it's a bit weird that it's been forgotten so much.
It almost sort of falls into a gap, doesn't it? It's not awful enough for people to be going, oh, did you see this awful film? And it's not, it doesn't really sort of shatter any boundaries or break any walls down or anything. It does, it's, no one's going to be like, oh yeah, this is amazing, this is my favorite film. It's just kind of in that middle ground, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And we've talked before about memeability. And this movie lacks memeability, which might be another reason. Whereas,
are you saying you've never enjoyed the meme of a priest and a rabbi in a leather jacket dancing to Smooth by Santana feat. Rob Thomas?
And that should be incredibly memeable, but it doesn't give you that 5 second like repeating GIF quality, does it? Whereas you look at something like Zoolander, for instance. It really, really has that quality. Or even earlier movies like Kindergarten Cop turns up all the time. And that's partly because it's on television every day on one channel somewhere or other.
Yeah, the Kindergarten Cop channel. You got that? On Sky, it's channel 9912.
I pay 69. Extra so I get Kindergarten Cop channel plus one, just in case I miss the start of it and can't wait the hour and a half to watch it again. But that movie, again, you know, it's got that kind of place in consciousness, and it's also got those very short snippets which are easily shareable, whereas Keeping the Faith, it doesn't have that, which is interesting. And I enjoyed watching it, but there's no distinct memory of this film that I can place that will stay with me permanently.
I just googled Keeping the Faith gifts, and what do you know, the top one was of them in the leather jackets and sunglasses walking along
and
looking like cool dudes.
Yes, and that's one of those, and there's funny moments in this movie, but that's one of those rare laugh out loud moments as well.
Yeah, it's just the perfect song as well, perfect for that time as well, like a hit from the time.
Yes, yeah, because I unapologetically, unironically love that song. It's one of my favorite songs. It is also one of my go-to songs for karaoke. If anyone ever has the opportunity to hear me at karaoke, that's going to be one of those things.
There's your number two song, because I know what your first one is.
My first one is Barbie Girl by Aqua.
Yeah, obviously. You know, Life in Plastic, it's fantastic.
It's fantastic. You can brush my hair, etc. What is my number one? I'm drawing
Careless Whisper.
Oh yes, I was thinking, is it Bon Jovi, because I've been known to do a Bon Jovi.
Bon Jovi, you're saying you get halfway there.
Well, I prefer to go Dead or Alive or You Give Love a Bad Name. I think You Give Love a Bad Name is my favourite.
Yeah, exactly.
Jonathan songs.
John Bonathan Jovi.
Yes. Yeah.
You Give Love a Bad Name is the song that Living on a Prayer wishes it could be. It's the thinking person's Living on a Prayer.
It is. It's the true connoisseur of 80s butt rock.
Butt rock. Is that the genre?
That is the official genre. One other thing I'd like to point out. If you search just for Keeping the Faith, it is not the top Google.
No, it's very annoying. There's some TV show called Keeping Faith that seems to be way more popular, which I am judging it purely on search results, but it looks rubbish and I hate it.
Which I think might be a bit unfair.
I never promised I would be fair.
Just a little bit unfair. It seems as though people like it. There's even people writing things like, when will season 2 be out? or when will season 3 be out? So it might be good. People like it.
Nah, it's on the BBC. That means it's bad. BBC stands for Bad Broadcasting Corporation.
Bad Brexit Corporation.
Yep. Definitely.
Can I talk about, you know, I'm
oh, do you want to talk about Brexit?
I don't want to talk about Brexit. Brexit is sapping my life.
It's been sucking all of us like the Mind Flayer for the last 3.5 years, and I'm done.
Yeah,
I'm done with this fucking shit.
Yeah, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of that nonsense. But what I was going to say is, you know how we sometimes talk about things that annoy us on the internet?
Yeah.
Rarely. Every so often we talk about...
Not that often, you know. Only if there's nothing else to talk about.
I hate it when people say BBC, more like Brexit Broadcast Corporation, or some equivalent of that. It's the equivalent of saying the Labour Party, or...
Yeah, or Tony B. Liar.
The Liberal Democrats.
No one says that.
No one says the
Liberal Democrats.
They should do.
No, they call them the Glib Dems.
Oh, yeah, the Glib Dems.
Glib Dems, but I much prefer the Liberal Democrats.
The
Peen Party.
The only place for wordplay is with nonsense that has nothing to do with real-world events.
There's no place for wordplay in politics.
No, exactly. More like Bojo the Clown, am I right? That's going to stick it to him.
Yeah.
Hey, we're undermining democracy at an alarming rate, but I refer to our Prime Minister as a clown.
Yeah.
Who says satire is dead.
That's how it works.
Yeah. So
Gideon Osborne.
Whoop. Yeah, Defeffel Johnson.
That is his actual name.
That'll show him, won't it? Because no one realised that Boris Johnson was posh before.
Yeah, nobody knew that. You couldn't tell from his voice or anything.
So that annoys me. But what doesn't annoy me is the movie Keeping the Faith.
Would you say you enjoyed it overall?
I did enjoy it. Yeah,
glad.
It does feel quite old-fashioned, and it didn't really strike me. I'm not sure it's going to be something that sticks in my memory for long.
No.
But it was a really nice movie to watch, and it felt really relaxed. And there's a couple of weird moments in it, which I'll talk about. We'll have a more serious discussion after we have stopped saying about how nice this movie is.
Oh, do we have to?
Yes, we do. It's only a minor thing. It's a minor thing that kind of rubbed me up the wrong way. Which things can do. I'm like a dog. You don't stroke me the wrong way. It's uncomfortable.
You got to let sleeping Robs lie.
You do. But it's generally a really pleasant movie, and it's quite, I think it handles its subject matter pretty well, because this could have been a very different kind of Ben Stiller movie, couldn't it?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a movie with Ben Stiller in it, but it's not a Ben Stiller movie.
Whereas a rabbi and a priest are best friends, and they're going to fight over a girl.
Yeah. Again, I think that's good conceptually. But yes. What's also good about it is that when you hear that, you think there are so many ways that that could be so terrible.
Yeah.
And it's not.
Rob Schneider's Keeping the Faith.
Rob Schneider's Keeping the Faith. He's a priest with a huge erection, and there it is.
Yeah, there's erection jokes, there's fart jokes.
Yeah, who would be the rabbi?
Oh, he would be the rabbi.
Oh, yeah, so he's the rabbi, right?
He's got to be the rabbi.
Yeah.
Because that
way, because that gives him more of a chance to do an offensive Jewish caricature.
There would be all sorts of jokes about kosherness. At the end, it would end with the priest throwing shellfish at
actually, is Rob Schneider Jewish?
I don't know, maybe. I don't delve into his personal life.
Google, is Rob Schneider Jewish? And the first also from on Google is Rob Schneider dead?
Well, is he, Paddy?
Well, I'm going to have to Google it now to check. Is Rob Schneider dead? No.
I don't think he is. He's doing stuff, isn't he?
People also ask, what is Rob Schneider's race? Oh, here we go. His mother and his father was Jewish and his mother was Catholic.
So he had a claim to either role.
He could do this film as a one-man show on stage.
He could
you imagine?
He could do Jack and Jill. You know the terrible Adam Sandler film?
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I want to force you to watch it at some point.
He could do that, but this movie, and he could play both the rabbi and the priest. I kind of want this movie to happen.
I would pay £3 to watch that film.
I would pay half price at a cinema to watch that movie.
Yeah.
That's how...
Orange Wednesdays.
Yep. Yeah, it could have gone very badly, couldn't it, this film? But they handled it relatively sensitively, and they handled it with nuance, and with they made them more than their roles in the film. They felt like genuine characters.
Definitely.
And genuine human people, whereas all three of them, they could have just been, you could have had, here's the rabbi, here's the priest, here's the woman. And her entire role in this movie could have just been the love interest. But in fact, her motivations and her desires are almost the most well-rounded in the film.
And she questions them as well, is the other thing. There's a point where actually she's talking to the rabbi's mum. And the rabbi's mum is very perceptive, and she has worked out that they're dating, even though you think she's going to be angry about it because she ostracized his brother for marrying a Catholic. But now she's okay with it. But all of that stuff between them was very, very well done. And she kind of gets her to open up and say, maybe I've prioritized my career over other things. And it's not done in a kind of, in an obvious way, because that seems like a kind of an obvious way to set up for someone sort of reevaluating their life, and a way that romantic films often get the romantic ball rolling is to deal with those kind of conflicts. But it's done well, and it builds sort of subtly and nicely over the course of the film.
Yes, yeah. And so I think they handled it really well, and I liked that. And that was kind of ahead of its time, I suppose, because you look at the other movies that came out around this time, and the way that they would have treated this subject matter, particularly a love triangle in this way. And they're not, it's not done anywhere, a lot of them don't do it anywhere near as well as this movie, which is really appreciated.
Yeah, and I don't know of any other films that portray, you know, religion in this way either, where it's semi-serious and it does ask philosophical questions about it, but it's ultimately still trying to tell a light-hearted story, so it doesn't come across as really, really heavy or to make you think.
No, exactly. It's not. It talks about faith without the movie being about faith.
Yeah,
and I suppose the best recent example of that is, have you watched Fleabag?
I saw the first season, but not the second season.
Okay, yeah.
Well, and now I feel like she's everywhere and I'm bored of it. So I don't know if I'm going to get around to watching it, but I did think the first season was good.
It's good. The second season, I think I liked more than the first.
Ah, okay. And she was in Solo, A Star Wars Story.
Yes.
As the voice of the droid, which was very good.
Yes. And she's writing Bond.
Yep, which I'm down with.
Yeah, which is cool.
She's going to turn him into a man who winks at the camera.
Yeah.
Which I'm all for.
And says, fucked me in the ass a lot. that's my lasting memory of the first series of Fleabag.
Yeah. If Bond doesn't turn around to the camera, Daniel Craig doesn't turn around to the camera, point the gun in the scene, and just before like the blood comes down and the Bond music comes up, he goes, fuck me in the ass. That's what I want to see.
That's what I want. That's what I want. Genuinely, Fleabag is very good. There's very few shows that I think are worthy of the hype when I come to them late. So I didn't watch Fleabag when it first came out. We kind of binge watched both series back to back.
Right.
After the hype had been everywhere, after Fleabag was everywhere on BuzzFeed, for instance. But it's genuinely incredibly funny, and I think the second series is
genuinely... BuzzFeed is still a thing?
BuzzFeed's a thing. Gotta love a bit of BuzzFeed.
I haven't seen BuzzFeed in ages. Remember, everything on the internet, sort of about 3 years ago, every link on the internet was BuzzFeed. They've fired everyone.
I want to go to BuzzFeed. Well, they fired their news team, didn't they?
I think
it was. Which is strange, because their news team does some really impressive bits of journalism. Much more so than a lot of the tabloid press.
They get
a lot of really good leaks from the government and make good use of freedom of information.
Actually, yes, that is true. Their politics page is quite good.
But yes, primarily go to BuzzFeed, do do that 30 question quiz to find out what 90s breakfast cereal you are.
Yeah.
And what that means for your love life. I love that shit. I genuinely do.
Which Disney princess are you?
I find it so relaxing to go on BuzzFeed for 15 minutes. You know, after I've had a stressful day, you know, I've made dinner, I'm sitting down, I've just eaten, I'm sitting down, putting something on TV that I'm not really paying attention to, and just go and do a couple of BuzzFeed quizzes.
Yeah.
It's just so relaxing, just that kind of inane sort of content that doesn't mean anything, and it doesn't need to mean anything. And we kind of, I think we've lost sight of that with everything awful in the world.
Yeah, definitely. Everything is really awful. Everything is awful. So,
everything is shit and we don't have a team. But yeah, so I like it. But yeah, BuzzFeed is good. Fleabag is really good. Phoebe Waller-Bridge is good. And Killing Eve is good. And her sister does all of the music for all of it.
What?
And that's all really good. So, good stuff all round. It's awesome.
Cool. I'm glad that there are still good things.
Yes, there are still good things.
Sometimes, you know, after you've watched After and then you've watched Secret Obsession, you have to wonder.
Well, it's funny you should say that because I've got a doozy lined up.
Have you?
No, I don't. I'm choosing something good this time. It feels like it's been a long time since I chose something good for us to watch.
It certainly has.
So there's one thing about this movie that kind of I found a bit awkward, and that is when Matey Boy, Ed Norton, goes around to her apartment after she's...
Oh, not the scene in the karaoke store with Don, the karaoke man.
Well, that I was thinking, oh, this is a bit bad, but then they kind of did a little reversal.
Yeah, it turns out that's not his real voice.
And he's clearly just fucking with anyone who comes into the store, which I appreciate. And I thought,
which is quite funny.
You go, lads. You fuck with people's expectations like that. I appreciated that. Initially, I thought, oh, God, this was the year 2000. This was not old enough for this to have been the norm in movies. But the thing that did sort of make me do a bit of a double take was, so Ben Stiller has... What are the character names? I don't want to just refer to them as...
He's Rabbi Jake.
So Rabbi Jake, old Rabbi Jake, we love him.
Good old Rabbi Jake.
So he's been a bit of a shitbag though. So he's just split up with Anna after she's sort of made a really sort of potentially big sacrifice or potential sacrifice to be with him and upend her life and try and find something new. And he basically turns around and says, "Nah, mate, I've got to marry a Jewish woman because, you know, that's life. Get out." So she calls up Brian Finn, very good Catholic priest name, Brian Finn.
Yeah,
I just point out.
Extremely good,
and you know, is looking for a friend to talk to because she's quite upset, and Brian gets the wrong end of the stick and goes round and thinks that it's going to be a declaration of love, which is a bit awkward, but you know, but what I found strange was that his reaction to it after that, where one of his supposed best friends is in a really bad state of mind and has just been treated incredibly poorly, was then to get angry and storm out.
Yeah.
And that reaction is never really addressed in the rest of the movie. I thought at some point he might apologize to her for not being a good friend. But instead it's almost the other way round, and she's trying to get in contact with him to make amends for her reaction.
Yeah, it's all about him.
Yeah, and I thought that was a bit weird because, I don't know, in that situation, it was initially Jake's idea not to tell Brian about it.
It's kind of patriarchal, isn't it? It's like, it's all about the man who's been wronged.
Yeah, and so it almost ends up, the movie almost ends up being more focused on their friendship getting back together rather than her friendship with him being resolved, which was a bit strange. And I'm not too sure I think that was handled very well.
Yeah, I think that the last sort of 20 minutes or no, it becomes a conventional rom-com climax ending and sort of pushes their friendship aside a little bit, when actually up until that point, it's been more of a friendship movie than a romantic movie, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And all it needed was a moment at the end where he apologizes to her for storming out and saying, I should have been a friend. And then she says, I should have told you about it. And that's all it needed to resolve it. But that never really happens, which is weird. And I guess it's maybe a sign of the times because this movie is effectively 20 years old.
I know. God.
But even so, I don't know.
Maybe it doesn't feel that old.
No, it doesn't, does it? Apart from the mobile phones.
Mobile phone thing. And yeah, then if you think about it, they're not looking at phones all the time. So in a way, it's extremely old.
Yes. And no Twitter.
No Twitter. Yeah.
No feral hogs.
No feral hogs. Yeah. Oh no, sorry, there are feral hogs in my church. Let's get them out of here. They tried to open their joint faith community centre. Can't. It's full of feral hogs.
Yeah, full of feral hogs. Yeah. Impossible to do it.
But also, Elliot Smith was still alive when this film was made. And one of his songs was on the soundtrack, which is very nice.
It's every so often I remember Elliot Smith and then I get sad.
Yeah.
Because I was never super into it sort of at the time.
No, me neither. But recently I've come to really like him more the last sort of 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. The last 5 years or so. And then when it comes up or when you just think about it, it's just like, oh, that's really sad.
Yeah. And you can hear his influence in so many of the kind of melancholy singer dudes.
Yes, yeah. And it's almost the same as Jeff Buckley, where the potential was never truly realized, and that's part of, you know, there's so much legacy to give that was never given.
Absolutely, yeah. So, yeah, when that popped up on the soundtrack, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that. That's nice. Mm. But also sad.
You know what didn't make me sad?
What?
This movie.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
I liked it. I did like it. As much as I gave it a little moan then, I think overall it handles stuff really well.
It does. And it's a little bit long as well. That's the thing. I think that it gets to a point where it can't decide whether it wants to be a romance, about the romance or the friendship, and it kind of it makes a choice, and that's fine because it's actually hard to do both of those things in one film, and it actually does pull it off in that they portray the teenage relationship between them well with a nice flashback, and then they sort of fall into being friends again without that, as adults, without that being too clumsy. So all of that stuff definitely works as background, which could end up being quite clunky.
Yes, yeah, it does, and I think it nearly pulls off the double balance of friendship and romance. And maybe it doesn't quite do enough to explore in a deep way the impact of relationships on friendship in that way.
No.
Where it is kind of just it's almost like a binary, isn't it? Is you're going out with him, so we can't be friends anymore. And it all gets a bit dramatic.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it would have been interesting if they had tried to explore it in a different way. But again, you know, this movie it is in its core a simplistic romantic comedy. And maybe the fact that it tries to do such interesting things is almost credit in itself, given how far it reaches that point.
It's really, really laudable. And it is ambitious, even though it doesn't seem like it, because it reads as a relatively pedestrian romantic comedy, but to ask those questions of a rabbi and a Catholic priest is ambitious.
Yes, yeah. It's nice that the dual focus on different faiths is never brought up in a controversial way. And that's almost interesting in itself, that the question of, you know, two different religions is never a point of conflict in it whatsoever. It's very personality driven. It's very character driven.
Yeah. And the faith makes up those personalities in a way that is nice and rounded, but it's not, you're right, it's not always the source of the conflict. Because I think a different filmmaker would be like, that's the source of all of the conflict and everything has to be this massive crisis of faith, when actually it's not. It's about, here's a romance, here are the obstacles.
Yes. And it's always easy when you portray people of faith in movies to have their characters defined by that.
Yeah.
And so it is refreshing. You know, this movie is old now because we are old men, Paddy. We are old people now.
Yeah.
You don't see that very often, do you?
I was trying to think of like a film about a priest or something, but I couldn't think of anything. And for some reason, what popped into my head was Bulletproof Monk. Remember Bulletproof Monk?
I remember Bulletproof Monk. What a movie. What a movie.
Yeah, we should talk about that. 2003. So it's only like three years removed from this. But wow, what a different film.
Yeah, it's slightly different.
Sorry, our main man, Sean William Scott.
See, the problem is that immediately when you think of films about priests, etc., horror movies are what comes to mind.
Yeah. I should have said The Nun.
The Nun. That's about a nun. Yeah. It's about multiple nuns.
She's very much defined by being a nun.
Being an angry nun. But then also the main character is also a nun, a not angry nun.
All right, so it's called The Nun, and that refers to the main character, but also a different nun.
Well, the nun is about the evil ghost nun, evil demon nun, rather than the main character. But the main character also happens to be a nun.
Right. That's confusing.
I'm thinking of other movies with priests in and trying to forget, trying to put horror movies out of my mind. So you've got
Dogma.
Got Dogma. That's a film. It's got that is such a weird movie, isn't it?
Yeah, really odd. 1999, so not far removed from this.
No. You've got There Will Be Blood.
Oh,
it's
It's
got a moon-faced boy who is a...
He drinks your milkshake.
Yep. You've got... There's priests in The Da Vinci Code, your favourite story.
Oh, yeah. What's the guy's name?
Tom Hanks.
He's not a priest. He's a professor.
No, he's a man of reason.
Paul Bettany. Then, for some reason, I couldn't remember Paul Bettany's name. Is he the angry priest?
So he's the angry priest.
Right.
But yeah, so that's got priests in it.
In fact, all of Dan Brown's stuff has got like, ooh, priests, they're up to no good, aren't they? Ooh, here's some mystery about some art. Here's a professor of a made-up subject to tell you all about it. Ooh, priests. Yeah. Ooh, that's every Dan Brown book.
Everyone's the Illuminati apart from you.
Yeah. it's aspirational. It's like, how do I become an Illuminati?
Yeah, exactly.
Five steps to Illuminati happiness.
Precisely. I can't really think of anything that's handled priesthood in such a human fashion.
No. Oh, did you... it's a TV series quite recent, so it's a very different... Did you ever see Rev?
No, I didn't. I heard that was good.
That was good. Tom Hollander. He was very good in that.
I do love a bit of Tom Hollander. You've also got The Young Pope with Jude Law.
A young
Pope.
I haven't seen that.
I haven't, but I hear he's young and a Pope.
But do you want to see Sexy Pope? Because he's obviously a young and sexy Pope, right? That's the whole point of it.
Yeah.
It's basically a TV show that says, what if the Pope was sexy?
What if the Pope wasn't a haggard old man?
Yeah.
And was instead a hot-bodied young lover?
Yeah. With a six-pack.
With a six-pack.
But it doesn't matter because you can't see it under the robes anyway.
No, but he knows. He knows. So he gives a cheeky wink every so often. It's like, I've got a six-pack. What of it? I'm ordained with the six-pack.
Yep. So we can't think of anything. So that therefore means that this film is the best portrayal of priests and rabbis in cinema.
Yeah, definitely. So one thing, why did Jenna Elfman not have a bigger career?
I was thinking the same thing as well. Yeah, she's
very
a bit
good.
Like, she's in quite a few films, but they're all relatively low key, aren't they? There's nothing that's like a huge breakout hit for her, is there?
No. Which is weird. She was in EdTV. Have you ever seen EdTV?
No, I have not.
It's like The Truman Show, but more realistic. So rather than this big old conspiracy that there's one person being filmed on this giant TV lot, instead they're quite open about just filming some random guy. And they're like, hey, we want to film you. And he goes, okay.
Oh, I'm looking at this now. It's Matthew McConaughey?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm into this. I want to see this.
Kind of underrated, I'd say. It's not got the same beauty and extravaganza as The Truman Show, but It does.
McConaughey, Woody Harrelson. This looks great.
It does its job. It's pretty decent. Yeah. And then...
She's in Clifford's really big movie, the classic.
Is that about the dog? Or
it is about
Max
the dog.
Clifford.
Max Clifford, yeah.
Yeah, that's a reference for you.
That's, yeah, that's a... he's a guy.
That's a person with the name Clifford. She was in Dharma and Greg. She was Dharma. Do you remember Dharma and Greg?
No, I never saw it. I'm aware of it.
The sitcom.
Yeah. Does it mean Dharma like the Buddhist concept?
Dharma like farmer, big farmer.
Big farmer. Yeah. Big farmer and Greg. I've seen that.
But yeah, and now she's currently in Fear the Walking Dead, so the Walking Dead spin-off show, which I've heard is pretty decent. Yep.
Oh, she was in the Dr. Dolittle Eddie Murphy, which is very bad.
That's a movie and a half, isn't it?
Oh, hang on. The film's success generated 4 sequels, Dr. Dolittle 2, Dr. Dolittle 3, Tale to the Chief, and Million Dollar Mutts, the latter 3 being direct-to-video.
Oh,
I'm sure she wasn't in that.
No. So, yeah, it's weird because she's really compelling in this. And the other things that I remember seeing her in, I think she's very talented. But it's just interesting that you've got these two powerhouses now, these huge names.
Yeah.
Whereas she's kind of not reached that same level.
And her husband, Bodie Elfman, appears in this film as the guy who's having sex in the window across the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's her husband.
That's amazing.
Mr. Elfman himself.
Ah, Mr. Elfman.
Yeah.
That's the name you get when you are an elf man.
Yeah, he's a literal elf.
Literal elf.
Like Will Ferrell in Elf.
Yes,
like that.
Exactly. So, I don't know what else to say about this movie, really. I'm bearing in mind we've got 15 minutes left to talk about Puccini.
Yeah, no, I think we've covered it. It's good. It's kind of low-key. It's underrated and understated, I think, actually. It's good, and it's worth a watch for anyone, I think. That's the thing. It has probably broad appeal, I'd say. Unless you hate rabbis.
Yeah, unless you hate rabbis and priests.
Yeah, and unless you hate like late 90s soft indie music plot-moving montages as well.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Or if you hate Ben Stiller testing a karaoke machine by doing a very low-key version of The King of Rock by Run DMC.
Exactly.
And if you hate Eli Wallach, who is great.
He is.
He is very old in this film. And he went on to be even older. He was 98 when he died in 2014.
Oh, wow.
Absolute ledge. He was in like The Magnificent Seven and lots of very old movies.
Did you ever watch the remake of The Magnificent Seven that came out the other year?
I did not.
No, because I didn't either. It seemed to have, you know, had all of these big names in it and then no one wanted to see it.
Oh.
It just seems a bit strange.
That's a shame.
Yeah. Maybe I will watch that at some point. So one bit of trivia, because we've got to talk about the greatest experience of our lives. When they're going to see Garcia's film, they're talking about Andy Garcia, obviously. And the movie they're talking about is When a Man Loves a Woman.
When a man loves a woman. I've not seen it. Have you?
I have not, but it's got Meg Ryan in it.
That sounds like the kind of film we should be watching. That's basically what a romantic film is. When a man loves a woman.
Yes. When a woman loves a man.
Yeah.
Do you want to rate this now?
Yes, let's rate it. How many people are in the line for your confession booth?
Oh, there is going to be a solid 14 people in the line to my confession booth.
Yeah, that's good. I'll go just one higher because I appreciate this film a lot. And now it holds up on multiple viewings. I mean, you couldn't do them too close together, but having not watched it for a few years and watched it again, it still really holds up. And there's still things about it when I'm watching it that I really like about it. As you say, it doesn't necessarily stay with you, but I think it's good. So I'll give it a 15.
Oh, good stuff. So it's a moment we've been waiting for. Puccini. What did you think of Puccini? This is your first time watching it.
Incredible. It opened with some sexy sax blues intro, and I was like, yes, this is what I want. Hook this right into my veins.
So this is a
It's on YouTube. I'll put the link in there.
It's on YouTube. I highly recommend you watch it. It's only about 20 minutes long. It's a pilot episode of a show that never got made called Puchinsky. And the general idea is...
Puchinsky.
The general idea is that there's a bad cop who ends up getting killed but gets resurrected as...
I mean, you say he's a bad cop, but who caught the grocery hall strangler, eh?
Indeed. But yeah, so he's seen sort of like just lazily walking around, eating hot dogs, being lewd. And then he gets killed and resurrected as a bulldog that he's just befriended.
Yeah. So he and the bulldog just kind of like mash themselves together in the car crash. And then he's like, oh, I don't know, I just saw a tunnel of light. And then it's explained. That's it. That's all you need.
That's it. Which does beg the question, what the hell happened to the soul of the bulldog?
I know. Or maybe it's being very, very prejudiced and saying that bulldogs don't have souls.
Which is unbelievably prejudiced.
Yeah.
Particularly in the age of Brexit, where bulldogs are, that is now the national
bulldogs
symbol.
Bulldogs are the most important animal in the world. They're protected.
Yeah. Three bulldogs on your shirt.
Yeah.
That's the new song.
You can't get rid of them. 30 to 50 feral bulldogs just in your yard. We're not allowed guns, so we can't get rid of the feral bulldogs.
Guns would not be enough to get rid of the bulldogs.
No. And by feral bulldogs, I mean Nigel Farage and his Brexit party. Because there's about 30 to 50 of them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Enough people to fit into a working men's club. And drinking gone-off ale.
So Puchinsky, right. The thing that's always struck me about this is how utterly terrifying the puppet bulldog is.
It's got a really nasty face.
It's a really horrible animatronic.
Yeah. I mean, the video on YouTube is low res, so I think it would actually be even worse if it was HD.
Yeah, if you could see an HD version of this,
if you could see
it
those fake
really
jowls
bad.
Moving.
Yeah. Oh, it's horrible. And so it talks... somehow he's able to still make human speech, which I appreciate, but it is, oh, it's a bit horrible. And then the plot is pure Paddy Johnston, I think, is the best way to describe it.
Well, there's a man who loves a woman in his building, and he needs the pushing of his dog cop partner, who's got the spirit of his former partner in him. to tell him to read the cues.
I was thinking more, oh, there's a sassy dog and things are going to get wacky, which I think is the definition of every film that you've ever loved.
That's my life. To be fair, that is a very accurate description of Beethoven, which is the greatest film ever made.
Exactly.
Actually, I want us to talk about Beethoven. We're going to talk about Beethoven.
All right.
It's your choice next, though.
It is my choice next, and it is not Beethoven. I won't take Beethoven away from you. You can be the one that chooses Beethoven.
Yeah.
So,
well, actually, maybe it should be Beethoven's second, because there is like a kind of very, very small romantic plot in Beethoven. But in Beethoven's second, like, Beethoven, the dog gets a girlfriend and has puppies. Spoiler alert.
I think we need to watch both.
That's true, actually. And to be fair, they shot them both together at the same time.
They did, didn't
they? So you can do it on that basis. Yeah, there's like a scene where you can tell that Charles Grodin is wearing the same pants he wore the night before.
So a few things to point out in Puchinsky.
It's awesome.
It's also
genuinely though, the amount of utter shit that's on television and the amount of utter bollocks that was being made in 1990, how did they not make this?
It's true. You think about some of the stuff that made it to air. And this didn't. And, you know, this is around the same time as Baywatch Nights making it to air.
Yeah, exactly. This is way more interesting than that. Way more fun. More goofy. And
I don't know. Baywatch Nights is pretty fun and goofy. It gets supernatural.
Does it have a flatulent bulldog?
It does not have a talking flatulent bulldog that also sexually harasses one of its co-workers. Because let's bear this in mind, right? He gets turned into a bulldog and then...
And then he's like, oh yeah, the women don't mind if I touch them now.
Yes. And it's like, oh,
Jesus Christ.
Which is very
1990.
Yeah, it's not good. But at the same time, he farts a lot and he also bites someone in the groin.
Yep.
Both of which are valid forms of entertainment.
Absolutely. I'm always here for some groin biting.
Yep. It's so he gets turned into a cop. Then he has some hilarious moments, which are not meant to be hilarious, where he's basically looking in a mirror going, this is what I am now. I'm a bulldog.
Yeah. And then at first he's really happy about it. And then, yeah, there's another scene where suddenly he gets all melancholy and he's like, oh my God, I'm a dog.
It's glorious.
It's really glorious.
Yeah. There's really, what I really love about it is that kind of nonsense where he suddenly turns around and is like, I'm a cop, God damn it. And I'd really like it to be, I almost wish if this got made into a film or into a series that it got turned into a really deadpan, serious cop drama where he just happened to be a dog.
His whole thing is that he wants people to take him seriously as a cop, but they don't because he's a dog.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Which, yeah, oh, it would have been great. It would have been so good.
Yeah, but I'm genuinely sad that it didn't get made.
Yeah.
But also kind of glad because the dog is scary.
Yeah. There'd be lots of real nightmare fuel out there if this did get turned into
But these days, you could make it really easily, couldn't you? You know, live action, sorry, or photorealistic animation, Lion King, whatever. Give me Puccinski now.
Yeah, precisely. That's what I want. I want Puccinski, goddammit. Take your Lion King and shove it.
Yeah, get out. I haven't even seen it.
The only other thing that's worth pointing out here is the show does kind of start with him being picked on by a bunch of kids and then he gets out his gun at them.
Yeah. It did make me chuckle, but I was like, oh, okay. To be fair, one of them pulls a knife on him first.
Yes. But that did really make me laugh. I enjoyed that a lot.
A flick knife, which is also very 1990s.
Super 90s.
Probably made of plastic.
Was he wearing those little gloves?
That he bought on a French exchange.
He's wearing those little gloves with studs on, with fingerless gloves with studs. That's what all the cool gangsters were wearing in 1990.
Yeah, for sure.
So is that enough Puccinski talk?
I just want to say that a line I really appreciated was when the police chief advises. So basically, it starts and the guy who's his partner has asked for a transfer. He doesn't want to be his partner anymore because he doesn't wash and he farts. And then the police chief is like, don't confuse hygiene with character, which I think is a very good life rule.
I think that is, yeah, that's a weirdly prescient line, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. They're suddenly good partners. And then when he becomes a dog, he can't even get rid of him.
No, exactly. It's there's some magic in there.
Yeah. And when he's got the sexy lady in his apartment, the dog says, "Let's create a little mood in here," and then he dims the lights somehow because he's a dog.
Yeah. And puts on the music. I'd like to point out that this show has Frank McRae in it, who I really love. So Frank McRae, he plays angry police lieutenant in Last Action Hero, which is a underrated Arnold Schwarzenegger movie about absolute nonsense and a meta look at action movies in general. He's also in License to Kill, the underrated James Bond movie, mm-hmm. with Timothy Dalton. And also he's in Batteries Not Included. Have you ever watched Batteries
Not
Included?
Film.
One of my favourite films when I was a kid.
It's a great film, really underrated.
Yep, I really love that film. You can take your E.T. and you can shove it up your ass. If you want a movie about aliens and robots and about friendly aliens and robots and how they're misunderstood and how society's own prejudices can turn us against each other, Batteries Not Included is the way to go. It's such a lovely film. I used to watch it all the time.
Absolutely.
It's such a great movie. E.T. can fuck off, I'm sorry. Get out,
E.T. Do you hate E.T.?
I don't hate E.T., but I think it's really overrated.
It's one of the most overrated films. Like, I never got the hype. I always just thought, oh, it's okay, yeah, E.T., phone home, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I didn't even realise people thought it was one of the best movies ever made until I was about 18. And I was like, what, really? Really? People think it's one of the best movies ever?
You know, the nostalgia that a show like Stranger Things would place on a film like E.T., is kind of demonstrates exactly why the latest season of Stranger Things is a bit off compared to the other stuff. What they really needed to be doing like a nostalgic trip about Batteries Not Included and it for all to be about little aliens.
What they really needed to do was have Puccinski references.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Yeah. That'll be the next one. Stranger Things 1990, and they've all got like animatronic dogs.
Yeah, that's what I want. Stranger Things guys, we know you're listening because you love us.
The new Mind Flayer is just like a giant bulldog.
Giant Paczynski.
With really weird angular jowls.
Yeah. And the only other thing I'd like to point out is that the main guy, played by George Newbern, he has been in movies set in the universe of Air Bud.
What?
Yep.
No way.
Uh-huh. So it all goes full circle.
I don't recognise him. Which...
So he is the voice of Bark in Popstar.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen Popstar. Oh, and Popstar Better Together.
And Puppy okay. Star Christmas.
I think these are... This is the fringes of the Air Bud universe.
Well, I think, yeah.
It's not canon.
I think it's all canon. It does have the Air Bud logo on it, which means it's officially part of Air Bud. It's just not about...
No, it's Air Bud Legends.
It's, yeah, but, you know...
Anything with the pups is Air Bud Legends.
Unless it's about a dog that plays some kind of sport moderately well, it's not true Air Bud then.
Yeah. That's okay. How it works. The original nine movies, Air Bud Saga.
Right, sure. So yeah, that's it for me on Paczynski. Are we going to do a double rate? Are we going to rate?
Yeah, we should rate Paczynski. I give it 20 out of 20.
How are we rating?
Very, very sad that it didn't get made. Genuinely, because there's so much shite out there, and it would have been really fun.
It would have been fun. Yeah, what are we ranking it out of? How many...
How flatulent is your dog?
How flatulent is your bulldog on a scale of 1 to 20?
On a scale of 0 to Winston Churchill.
Yep. So I get up to Nicholas Soames on the 0 to Winston Churchill level.
That's a very good answer. Can't go as far as Churchill himself.
No. So I'm at Nick Soames levels.
I'll go with that as well.
Yeah. a nice inscrutable ranking system here. You people at home can make what you want out of that rating.
Yeah.
Do what you see fit. But do watch Paczynski. It's on YouTube. It's funny. It's a thing.
It's not hard to find.
It is out there. It is not.
Sorry, I'm just on the Air Bud Wikipedia page, and there's an amazing table of like how all the actors cross over the films and stuff.
I don't know if I really want to know. I'd rather let the magic.
That's cool. There's quite a long cell which just reads various Golden Retriever dog actors. But the original Air Bud was played by the real Air Bud.
Was his name Air Bud?
It was Buddy. Buddy, yeah.
Like the elf.
Yeah. March 23rd, 1988. He's born the same year as us.
Oh, wow.
So February 10, 1998.
What a great year, 1988.
Yeah. He was best known for his role as himself in the movie Air Bud and as Comet in the TV sitcom Full House.
Oh, wow. Yeah. He's a double famous doggo.
Buddy was found by Kevin DeChico as a stray dog in the Sierra Nevada at the summer of 89. He adopted the disheveled golden retriever and brought him home to San Diego, where he trained him in the sports of basketball, baseball, football, soccer, and hockey. There you go.
Hockey.
He was touted as the Michael Jordan of dogs. Citation needed.
What if it turns out he was called that by Michael Jordan?
Yeah. I'm going to make it my mission to provide a legit citation for that.
Yeah, you need to. Go find it.
I'm going to call up Michael Jordan and be like, hey, man, I know you listen to our podcast.
He does. He's a big fan.
I know
fan.
You're a big fan. Yeah. He loves the Bridges of Madison County.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't?
Yeah. The Hoops of Madison County, as he calls them. Good times. So, Keeping the Faith is good. Paczynski's good.
And we've got a movie next that... So, I don't know if you've seen, but the trailer for The Joker is out, and the early reviews are in for Joker.
Is it a man, Joaquin Phoenix?
It is Joaquin Phoenix. He's playing Joker. It looks like it's basically doing Taxi Driver or King of Comedy, but with the DC Comics villain, which is an interesting concept. And
now, The King of Comedy, that is a film that I like, that I think really is also underrated.
I really love that film, and it always astounds me that more people haven't seen it, because, you know, it's got a powerhouse performance in it, and it's got, you know, some great direction.
One of De Niro's best performances.
Yeah, definitely.
If not his best.
Definitely. And so this, there's definite parallels between that and Joker, apparently, which is interesting. Yeah. There's been a lot of absolute fucking nonsense being talked about it, where people are saying, it's going to lead to more mass shootings. It's going to inspire loads of mass shootings.
Come on.
I'm like, no, it's probably not, because people will look for any reason to create acts of violence like this. It's effectively the equivalent of the right-wing press in the 90s blaming Doom on the mass shootings in schools.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
You can't put something like that to a piece of media.
Video nasties for 2019.
Yes, precisely.
Boring.
And so he's been on my mind as old Joaquin, because it looks like he did a lot of great work in this film. And so I was thinking, I'd like to watch a good movie with him in. So we're going to be watching Her.
Ah, I can't believe we haven't done that already.
No, I know. It's a really great film.
I've seen that film. I like it. It's good.
But I haven't watched it since the cinema. So it's going to be great to rewatch it.
I never saw it in the cinema.
Oh, it was good. It was good. But yeah, I've not seen it since. So I'm excited to watch it again.
Very good. Very good. That is a good choice, actually. You've redeemed yourself after choosing Secret Obsession.
How dare you? What a great movie that was.
Very good. Very good. All right. Well, I think that about covers everything. I'm just looking at pictures of Air Bud in Full House. Oh, he's such a good boy.
But they never could have done an Air Bud Full House crossover properly then, could they?
No. Well, actually, I guess this means that Full House is in the Air Bud universe.
That is an interesting conundrum. Listeners, think on this between now and the next episode. Full House, Air Bud, what does it all mean? Paczynski, what does that mean? We'll leave you with those.
Yeah, what does it all mean? Now I'm on a BuzzFeed post. So BuzzFeed is still a thing.
BuzzFeed's a thing. It posts constantly. It's a constant source of entertainment.
Yeah.
This podcast brought to you by Rob's love of nonsense BuzzFeed lists.
Pick your favourite films for an underrated series recommendation. Choose your favourite Netflix original. Let's just do this quiz and then we can wrap up.
Okay. Right.
Dumpling, Someone Great, The Week of, When We First Met, Bird Box, or Murder Mystery? You remember
this...
when we first met? That's the one where Adam what's his name, is fat now.
Out of those choices, I guess it's got to be Dumplin. It's between that and Bird Box. Bird Box was all right.
I haven't seen it.
There were some good moments in Bird Box, but yeah, I guess it's Dumplin.
Yep. Okay, what's the best Disney movie of all time? Zootopia, Cinderella, Moana, Lilo and Stitch, The Little Mermaid, or Aladdin? How is the Black Cauldron on this list?
Aladdin.
Fuck this quiz. Choose your all-time favourite musical. The Sound of Music, West Side Story, Annie, Pitch Perfect, Hairspray, or Grease?
Oh, those are some bad choices. But
sounded like a list of grooming products.
I'm going to go Grease.
Grease. Another film we should talk about.
Indeed.
How about a classic 80s movie? Okay, The Princess Bride, Heathers, The Breakfast Club, Back to the Future, The Goonies, or Die Hard?
Oh, that is a difficult
one. That is tough.
I think I'm going to have to go Die Hard, but Princess Bride runs it really close.
Yeah.
I do love Princess Bride.
Inconceivable. Pick a new movie you can't wait to see. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Fuck off. Cats, Downton Abbey, Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker, Frozen 2, or Mulan?
It's got to be Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, Jesus
I loved
Christ.
I had such a great
have
time
you seen
watching it?
It.
Yeah, I've seen
Isn't
it.
Isn't there like a massively racist portrayal of Bruce Lee in it?
It's not racist.
It's just stupid.
It's just stupid.
that you could say that about any of Tarantino's work.
have I not talked about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood on this podcast?
No.
Let's finish the quiz
and then you can do that. There's one more thing. Pick a random movie. Mean Girls, La La Land, The Spy Who Dumped Me, Avatar, Finding Nemo, or Just Go With It.
You know what? out of those choices, I'm choosing The Spy Who Dumped Me because that film is fucking amazing. Have you watched it?
No, it looks really stupid.
In 2 weeks' time, that's my choice of movie. Remind me if I forget, because it's got romance, it's got explosions.
Is Melissa McCarthy in that?
No, that's Spy.
I'm thinking of something. Oh, damn it.
Which is also dumb and funny as hell. They're both dumb and funny as hell. They could do a double.
Do you want to know what your underrated series recommendation is?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Is Brooklyn Nine-Nine underrated?
No. I'd say it's rated.
I'd say it's rated well. People
really
think
it's good. It's good.
Yes. Yeah. People really love it. I love it. It's good.
This is a terrible quiz. I'm not going to put it in the show notes.
Everyone's choice is Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah. So anyway, talk to me about how shit Quentin Tarantino is, because I love it.
So I watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and it is a strange movie because it's very subdued by Tarantino standards, and it's quite languid and sprawling. It almost feels like a Linklater movie at times, where it's to do with the friendship between Brad Pitt, who is the stunt double of Leonardo DiCaprio's washed up Western actor. And so it's a really weird film in general, because it's got all of that going on. And it's quite interesting seeing this person whose career is kind of winding down and he's wondering about going over to Italy to be in spaghetti westerns.
Is that what Tarantino's going to do next?
Maybe. He's done westerns, though. He's done two westerns now. So that's all kind of weird, and it's kind of boring in places. And there's these weird moments of sort of jarring surprise. Like, it suddenly gets dropped on you about halfway through the movie that Brad Pitt's character might have murdered his wife. And it's like, what? Okay. And then it's never really sort of delved into beyond that, which is quite an interesting choice. But then there's also, you've got these fictional characters, but then it also intertwines with the story of the Polanski murders, the Charles Manson murders.
Right. Not to be confused with the Puccinski murders.
No, exactly. And so it's really weird. So they go out. So Brad Pitt ends up out in the ranch where the Manson family was living. And they've got all of these passing discussions with the Manson family. And at the end, spoiler alert, if you're going to go see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the Manson family turn up outside Polanski and Sharon Tate's house. And they're about to go in and murder them when Leonardo DiCaprio's character comes out and hurls abuse at them and is like, get your fucking loud car off my fucking driveway. And so they leave, and then they decide, you know what, we're going to go back and kill him instead. But then they turn up just after Brad Pitt smoked an acid cigarette. They try and stab him and he doesn't feel anything, and then he straight up fucking murders them. And there's suddenly this really violent, really funny scene where the Manson family are getting brutally murdered by Brad Pitt and Brad Pitt's dog. And then the one that survives is like outside in the pool, like having run through a glass window to escape, when Leonardo DiCaprio gets out a flamethrower and sets them on fire. And it's just I really loved the end of the movie, but it was also very strange because it's dealing with the real brutal murders of people 50 years ago and creating this bizarre comedic sort of divergent history.
That just sounds a bit grubby to me, you know?
Sort of raking over
the bones of the Charles Manson murders, well, and then making them overblown and funny.
Well,
but that
I
also
don't
sounds not funny.
It's very, very funny. Even you would find it very, very funny. In
even
spite
me
of how
with my lack of sense of humour.
Well, no.
A man who will laugh at nothing unless it involves the dog.
I know that you would begrudge Tarantino anything, but even you would find this scene incredibly humorous. It's hilarious. But it's weird because all of the way through the movie, when it was tying in the real world events, I was like, I'm not too sure about this. But then the end is so overblown and so funny. And I think there's something great you can do by making a mockery of monsters. And it's what Mel Brooks made an entire career out of. And here you've got Tarantino making a mockery out of these monsters in the Manson family. And I think that's some of the best ways that you can utilize satire and you can utilize art. So I'm a little bit uncomfortable with it, but even Sharon Tate's family gave the go-ahead for the film, and they were happy with the way it was all portrayed.
Right, okay.
So, you know, the people actually involved in it, they were okay with it. And, you know, I can't really argue with that. Whereas there is a movie out on Netflix, I noticed, called The Haunting of Sharon Tate, which is a horror movie about Sharon Tate's murder.
That sounds
which
awful.
I imagine is not so good. And I don't
I'm sure the family gave that, yeah.
So I don't know. It was a weird film. I think it's probably the work of his that I've enjoyed the least, but it also there was moments of it that were kind of interesting, and it did give me a genuine belly aching laugh at the end when you're seeing Brad Pitt smash an evil hippie's face into the top of a fireplace over and over again. It's really, really funnily done. And I think Tarantino's use of comedy is actually very good at using comedy well.
And that's because he's got clowns to the left of him and jokers to the right.
I want more humor from him, I think, and less.
Yeah, he should have been just an out and out comedy guy. He should have teamed up with Rob Schneider.
does what Rob Schneider does constitute comedy? I'd say it's more disturbing than anything Tarantino's ever done.
Yeah, violent.
But speaking of other things that were a bit of a letdown after a really long period of time, just before we go. New Tool album is out, and it's fine, I guess, if that's your thing. It's been 13 years since Tool released an album.
Is that right?
Did you ever listen to Tool?
Only here and there. I always found them quite boring, if I'm honest.
Like, I found that Tool, when they were cohesive and when they had a point and a structure, they were very, very good. So albums like Lateralis or... songs like 46 and 2, where they have a real incisive nature to them, worked very well. But where they didn't work well was where they were really languid and drawn out and their songs lasted like 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's how it always felt to me. It just felt like masturbatory.
And that's what this entire album is. I think every single song that's actually a song and not just a 2-minute filler window is at least like 9 minutes long. And they used to be very good at getting to a crescendo at the end of a song, and you're like, okay, it's all building up to this really good endpoint. That does not happen on right. any of the songs on the new album. They just kind of go on and then they end. But of course people are going, oh yeah, this album's amazing, it's so great, it's so great to have Tool back, you don't get music like this anymore. It's like, well, you didn't get it back then because they actually had some self-restraint back in the day. So that's my hot take, is new Tool album is fine, I guess.
People come here for the hot takes. That's what you want to hear.
Whereas Quentin Tarantino's new movie, is the end worth sitting through 2.5 hours? Probably not. But when it comes to streaming services, give it a watch.
I'll put it on in the background while I'm ironing or something.
And then you can watch a dog attack a hippie, which is what we all want to see.
Oh yeah, if there's dogs in it, I'm there.
Yeah, his dog is great.
What breed is it?
It's a Staffy. Staffies are cute.
Not my fave.
I love a Staffy because in general they're really, really sweet dogs, and then the people who buy them because they look hard are really frustrated about how sweet they are.
Yep.
Which I thoroughly enjoy. So those are the two current media hot takes of the podcast, I suppose.
I haven't seen anything that's current because a tiny child. I've read Elmo's Bedtime Countdown.
How's that?
Probably
does that involve
upwards of 60
does that
times,
involve hippies getting murdered?
No. His mum and dad. Did I show you the picture of Elmo's dad with his soul patch?
You did.
Yeah. I've read that a lot. It's good. And the Very Hungry Caterpillar, of course.
Oh, of course.
So my hot take is that is good.
Excellent stuff. Right. Yeah. That'll about do it, I think.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah. What did you think of Keeping the Faith, people? What did you think of Paczynski? Get in touch with us on Twitter at BigBoysDon'tPod. Emails at BigBoysDon'tCryPodcast@gmail.com. Love to hear from you.
Yeah, do you want to tell me how I'm wrong about the new Tool album? Feel free to get in touch.
Yeah, all of the Tool fans will be all up in our mentions, I'm sure.
They definitely will.
Cool. And we'll be back next week to talk about her.
Alrighty, bye-bye.
Bye.